Hello and welcome to Locked On Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning. Today's show is a return from the hiatus, unintended hiatus, but we're back. The Cavs played the Pistons last night, lost 127-94. So today's show, getting into that a little bit, getting into some of the rotational changes and challenges for John Beilein on the horizon, and then get into what to kind of look for the rest of the week as the Cavs play Orlando and Philadelphia. As the other two games on this interesting little schedule bullet post we'll get into. But we're back. I'm back. Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. Actually, daily now, and part of Locked On Podcast Network. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, first thing, just running through some of the box score stats from Cavs Pistons. Again, a 127-94 loss for the Cavaliers. Comes against a Pistons team that's been a bit up and down, has had its own struggles and trials and tribulations this year. The Cavs outscored by 4 in the first quarter, and then by 12 into the second, and then 13 in the third. This game felt very much over. I felt at the half, just a game where the Cavs weren't entirely into it, weren't especially feeling particularly kind of come out of there. And to look at some of the detailed numbers in this one, which we'll get into, the Pistons shoot 46% of their shots at the rim. They only made 59.5% of them, though. The real damage comes on corner three-pointers. The Pistons end up taking 17% of their shots on corner threes. That's in the 90th percentile, according to Clean of the Glass. That's the closest three-pointer for any player. And they made 68.8% of those shots. So that's a very tough thing for the Cavs to overcome, especially when the Cavs only took 29% of their shots as three, and only shot under 30% on those shots. For the Cavs, statistically, Colin Sexton leads the way with 22 points on 8-16 shooting, 6-7 from the line, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, no blocks, 2 turnovers. Tristan Thompson with 10, Jetty Osmond with 10, Kevin Love with 8 and 4. Darius Garland has 7, started 0-4, did finish 3-4 the rest of the way. Nance with 7 off the bench. Jordan Clarkson with 10, Kevin Porter Jr. with 12, and John Henson in his first game in quite a while, 14 minutes, 1-3 from the field, 0-1 from 3, 2 boards, 2 assists, a steal, and 2 points overall. So for me, the big thing from this game is that corner 3-point shooting for the Detroit Pistons. The Cavs gave up a lot of corner 3s, and I do mean a lot. Detroit absolutely picked at this in the Cavs game plan. They made Cleveland's defensive life much too difficult. On first watch, on just taking notes in this one, the Cavs definitely weren't. I don't think the effort level was particularly there on defense either. I don't think this was a good defensive effort. I don't think that this was any sort of savant-like quality defensive effort from Cleveland. But I think, to Detroit's credit, they were chasing these shots. They had shooters stationed in those areas and really exploited what they seemed to have find as a weakness, that the Cavs weren't rotating there, the Cavs weren't staying with their man there, and that just over and over and over again. Again, if you go to the Clean in the Glass stats, it's a great website. You guys should subscribe. It's Ben Falk's site. Excuse me for the little noise there. It is his statistics-only site that is, as Daryl Morey said, like some really great insight into data that teams used to only have. They took threes at a insanely high clip. For the year, I'm going to look this up live here, but this isn't a team that's, like, I would say is, like, particularly great on the offensive end. If you look at their offensive overview as a team, the Clean in the Glass has them at, you know, their ninth in offense, which, okay, like, you can, I think, certainly kind of ride with that. They're actually fourth in corner three, so this is something they do. They're 10.2%, 10.1% last year. This is like a seemingly a strength of this team. They ratcheted that all the way up to 17% of their shots in this one. 17%. They also got more shots at the rim. They're sixth in the league in shots at the rim this year at 37.8%, so they're kind of strong in those two analytically friendly areas. The Pistons in this particular game shot 17% of their shots there and three corner threes, 46% at the rim. Those are pretty notable jumps, and they just badgered the Cavs en route to a very good offensive game. And if you look at their offensive sort of profile in this one, this wasn't like You know, Blake Griffin was kind of the best player on the floor in this one. I thought he was kind of the guy leading the way here, 8-13. But Drummond, 7-15. Derrick Rose had a good game, 6-12 off the bench. Svi from the Mikovic, he's played for the Lakers, 5-11, 15 points. Basically, everyone they sort of needed to contribute found a way to contribute. And the Cavs just kind of don't really have answers for some of that stuff, and that's just sort of a problem. But particularly picked apart by these corner threes. I think this game is another example of how Kevin Love really isn't involved enough. I don't think he's really being utilized in the way that I would sort of want him to if I was the Cavs. He came into Monday only taking 0.1 more shots per game than Tristan Thompson. That actually might change now because Tristan took more shots than Kevin in this one. He's fewer shots per game. That's four shots per game on average, fewer than Colin Sexton, who leads the team in shots. Kevin Love is third on the team in usage. John Henson is weirdly one, but if you remove from that because of small sample size, Love is behind Colin Sexton and Jordan Clarkson. I think Kevin can just be leaned on a bit more. It can help some of the struggles we're seeing with him. And I think with this group right now, this is a group that doesn't have flow, that doesn't have stability, that doesn't have kind of a night-to-night baseline of what it's going to be, and that's a problem. That limits the floor of a team that I think is bad, maybe not objectively as bad as like the Knicks or something like that, but isn't necessarily good or quality at this point, or even average. For him in 22 minutes, which he doesn't play the whole way because there was no really point late in that third quarter, he takes 7 shots. He scores 8 points, has 4 boards. That's just not enough work for Kevin. If you look at his overall numbers for the year, I don't think his numbers by any stretch of the imagination are bad. If you just look at what he's doing in his age, he's 31. You know, you wonder what the rest of his career is going to look like. But he's playing over 30 minutes a game for the first time since 2016-17. He's shooting 44.6% from the field. That would be his best mark since 2017-18, when he was playing a lot of center that last LeBron year. Shooting 36% from three. That's about what he was in 2015-16, kind of those two non-LeBron years. Shooting much higher in two-point shots than he has at any point since he's come to Cleveland, at 54% right now. On fewer attempts per game, but that's still notable. Shooting well from the line, he's averaging like 17.3 points a game. His numbers are indicating that he's sort of Kevin Love. He's averaging 11.1 rebounds right now. Like, Kevin's been, like, numbers-wise good. It just feels a little bit empty right now, and I don't think he's not contributing to winning. I think it's sort of like he is not enough to kind of raise the floor. I think they can lean on him more and maybe change that, but that would just be an adjustment I would personally make. As for Garland, kind of coming off that maybe his best game of his career, he was rough. Started 0-4, doesn't make a 3. That reliance on floaters was there a little bit too much, but did finish 3-4, made one, at least one tough floater, so not a totally lost night for him. If there was one other thing to me that was good, it was that I liked, well, two things. One, Colin Sexton can at least get off shots and can at least kind of be competitive. I always will just sort of ride for that trait in players. And then there's Kevin Porter Jr. Finished 5 of 11, 2 of 4 from 3, 7 boards. There's still stuff with him that doesn't always work, but it's just not always bad. He doesn't look overwhelmed, and I think you can ride with that if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers. All in all, the Cavs just got shellacked. The Pistons are a better team, a more veteran group, have Blake, have Andre, well coached by Dwayne Casey and company. I think that just manifests itself here. The Pistons really exploited those things that they're already targeting, as the kind of data shows, and then just really beat up on what the Cavs were sort of doing. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about some of the rotation changes that could be on the horizon. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. All right, we're back with more Locked On Cavaliers. Chris Manning here, your host from Through the Sword, Forbes Sports, Cleveland Magazine, and other places. Okay, so rotational changes to come. So I thought John Henson came back, didn't get hurt again, and was fine. He looked rusty to me in those 14 minutes, 1-3 from the field, 0-1 from 3, 2 boards, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, 1 foul. He was sort of one of the real positives, and that's, again, a very low bar to clear because they got shellacked. But it's clear that he's going to play, which I do think is good considering he's the only real rim protector on the roster. Tristan has come back down to earth a little bit. I think he's a good defender at everything, but Henson's the kind of the one guy with a track record of being a real rim protector. I think it solves kind of your Larry Nance can't play center conundrum that I think we've seen a bit this year, although I think Nance has been pretty good for the last week plus. Thompson is going to be good, but he's not going to protect the rim in that way, and I think having Henson there is just, it's going to help you in some regard. I think John Henson's a useful NBA player. But If you count Hensa right now, here's just a list of the Cavs that are going to probably, I would just assume, always kind of see minutes. Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Jetty Osman, Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, John Henson, Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson, Kevin Porter Jr., Matthew Dellavedova. Right there, that is 10 guys. You can make a case for Alonzo McKinney, who I think has been useful, and I think is a useful wing. I like Alonzo McKinney. That's 11 guys. You have Dylan Windler, who should be back soon. He makes 12. Even if he starts his real professional career, non-summer league edition, in the G League with the Canton Charge, he's going to get minutes. He's going to eventually play at this NBA level. I know he's a beeline favorite from that's just a fact of the cap situation. Brandon Knight exists, Ante Zizic exists, etc. There are just too many guys to play functionally or with any kind of flow, and I think that's certainly lacking at the moment, and I think that's certainly something that's going to continue to be something to watch as we go forward. I think moving forward, one of the real challenges for John Beilein, one of the real challenges for this team and this organization, is to find a flow, find kind of a rhythm, find kind of a baseline level of effort, of organization, of quality that we just haven't seen yet. That's a really hard thing to do when you have moving pieces, when you have different lineup changes, when you have very young players and a coach kind of coming into the NBA and everything. There's things working against the Cavs in that regard. It was certainly there at the beginning of the season. I don't quite know what the reason for the drop-off. It just feels like a little bit worse product right now than kind of what we're seeing, but that's maybe to be expected. There's probably going to be some kind of regression there. The peskiness maybe has gone away too, which is a little bit tough, but for me, if I'm looking at what is going to make the next month of Cavs basketball, the next 6 weeks, the next 2 months of Cavs basketball successful, I think it's about John Beilein finding a rotation that at least works in a way for the Cavs to raise their floor and make things more consistent night to night. You want to flow. You want to feel like this is sort of a thing that isn't just going to fall completely rudderless and go crashing into the lake or whatever. That was the case last year. That's the case of really objectively bad teams where, like, you could play great one night and you could have a guy shoot you in a game, and then the next night you're going to give up 200 points or not 200 points, but like 150 points or something, and you're just going to like feel like you're out of a game by the second quarter. That's sort of the Cavs you saw tonight, but we've seen them play tough. You know, think of the Philly game not that long ago where like the end of the game is a loose ball. Joel Embiid literally is like raising his arms up in celebration like he won the heavyweight world title in the UFC or something, because he's like celebrating this win that the Cavs like made them grind and win for. That is not happening right now. If you want to just look at their schedule, pull this up here, it doesn't feel like the Cavs right now are a team that is like getting close wins, if you're playing close games. If you want to look this up, okay, so if you go back into basically the last overage, you have the 11-25 game against the Nets. That was kind of a gritty grind game, but since then shellacked, kind of hung toughish with the Bucks, but it wasn't like the most close game. The Magic game they lose by double digits, the Blazers game they win, but then you have the shellackings by the Heat. You lose to the Knicks in kind of an embarrassing fashion. Philly just beats the crap out of the Cavs. The Heat also had another game where they just kind of beat the crap out of the Cavs. The Mavericks have absolutely just destroyed the Cavs the two times they played them. There are games where you get that this, and it's more frequent than I'm probably giving them credit for. It's more frequent than last year for sure. But to me, if you're looking at what is going to make this group successful between now and the All-Star break and the trade deadline or any other arbitrary deadline you want to put out there, that to me is the benchmark. You want to see this group find some sort of solidified structure, solidified baseline of quality that is just not there, I think, all the time now, and I think is going to continue to be a challenge for John Beilein going forward. There's just a lot of bodies. When you consider, for me, if I'm looking at guys that I think are locks, I think it's obviously the five starters, Sexton, Garland, Osman, Love, Thompson. Nance is there. Clarkson is there. I think KPJ has earned himself there. I think Henson is there, so that's nine. To me, Windler is 10. Windler is the guy that, as the shooter, he's going to provide a skill set that doesn't exist now. He's going to provide, I think, just a level of theoretically provide spacing that even if he's objectively crap on defense, I think he can provide usefulness in that way. That, you know, I wonder if that means you're seeing certain other guys, who will get into Delly in particular, kind of as the odd man out there, maybe certain nights McKinney or Delly plays and Henson doesn't play or something, but there could be some sort of night-to-night tweaks, but I think you want to find kind of a core group of guys, and particularly like eight guys. I think ideally you're hoping to find that you can just kind of bank on playing decent basketball or competitive basketball night-to-night. That's going to be take some structuring. You know, Beeline has teased lineup changes in the past. I don't know if, you know, we'll see that at all. I don't know if we're going to see, like, a really... You know, I don't think they're going to... I don't know if we're going to see them, like, rip up things or change rotations or do anything like that. But I just think there's got to find a way to find some sort of stable flow and just find a way that things that works. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's, you know, I think, you know, not starting Jetty is kind of the Twitter thing that you would change. You know, my pet favorite one is sort of... You bring in Clarkson for Garland early, and then you play Garland with, you know, with a Nance bench unit, and kind of give Garland kind of a more free reign on offense, where he's not playing with Clarkson, who's playing a lot with right now. That would kind of be my structural change. I don't know though. The one guy to kind of watch here is potentially a logical casualty. Probably is Matthew Dellavedova, which is unfortunate. I think Dally's a good human being. I think he's a great locker room guy, fan favorite, all those things. But if you look at him right now, only played 2 minutes, I think, against the Pistons. For the year, he's shooting 9.4% on three-pointers. That's through Tuesday's game. He cannot be playable if that's the case. No matter how much I know Beeline trusts him, likes him, believes in his kind of leadership on the floor, that is unsustainable. Matthew Dellavedova's NBA value really always derived from three-point shooting and defense. And defense was kind of the first thing. He was like a 3-and-D guard type. That was what made him work for the Cavs that long ago. And particularly, he's got to make catch-and-shoot threes. And if you look at his numbers, looking at his NBA stats page right now, for the year, I get 9.7. So he's shooting 9.7 on three-pointers in 17 games, according to this breakdown. That is including 50% of his shots are catch-and-shoot three-pointers. He's making 11.5% of those. That is a number that has to get better. He would change his shot this summer. It's faster now, whatever. Maybe there's something there that is causing that. But Dele's been bad, and I wonder if he's kind of the casualty of the rotation. You know, trades will theoretically probably happen as well, so you'll get some roster change and some new bodies will come in. But maybe, like, we see McKinney getting what should be Dele's minutes, excuse me. But we'll see. I think, again, this roster construction, the rotation adjustments to come are the biggest thing to look for with Beeline between now, the All-Star break, the trade deadline, you know, the rest of this month or whatever. I think those are kind of the things to look for. All right, one more break. We'll be back with more Cavs talk today on Locked On Cavs. Okay, Chris Manning here for Locked On Cavs, back with the last segment of today's show. What to watch for the rest of this week. The Cavs have two more games this week. Orlando on Friday at home, and then they're going to Philadelphia on Saturday to play the 76ers. It's a tough back-to-back, and for me, sort of not the most interesting set of games we've seen, because Cleveland has already played Orlando and Philadelphia already. We sort of know what the shape of these games should look like, how the Cavs are going to struggle. If you just look at the 76ers, for instance, it's a problem because that team is really big. Josh Richardson's injury does... throw some sort of a wrinkle into that. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, he is currently dealing with a hamstring injury. They're going to be cautious with him coming back because they don't want to rush him back. They're playing the long game, which is the right move. But whether he plays or not, that team has Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris. Like, these are guys that are going to make the Cavs kind of struggle in certain ways. And I think they're, you know, I think both cases in particular, like if the Cavs are going to, which Kevin Love, kudos to Spencer Davies for asking the question on Tuesday, talking about how this group hasn't really established Kevin Love in any way, or hasn't figured out how to get him kind of going. You know, like, those are tough teams to do it against. They're going to have long bodies, long athletic bodies to have on Kevin. Embiid could guard him in the post, for instance. You could have guys like Isaac and Gordon and Kem Birch. Not Mobamba would be fine. You know, like, those are things for the Cavs to kind of have to deal with in terms of getting Kevin Love involved. There's athletic, long guys these next couple games. So we'll see kind of how the Cavs would sort of work with that. But that's a tough back-to-back. And this is part of an overall tough stretch for the Cavs. You have Boston, who's pretty good next Monday. Then you get the Rockets. James Harden could score a lot of points Wednesday. So I would actually buy tickets for that one and just go watch Harden, even if you don't love the aesthetic. Like, he could score a lot. Then you have the Spurs, and then you have the Bucks again. So, like, Giannis, as we know, is going to do whatever he wants against the Cavs. That is a rough start to December. Then, after you play the Bucks, you're getting Toronto. And the Raptors are good. The Raptors are pesky and good, and even without some of their key guys, like, are still a pretty quality team that people, like, that will be pretty favored against the Cavs. Then, you know, you get Charlotte. You get Memphis, who may or may not have John Moran and Brandon Clark back by then. Those guys are currently week-to-week with injuries. The Hornets are not good, but, you know, play hard, whatever. They're not the Knicks. That's a compliment to anybody. That's just a very tough stretch, and in the context of what I'm talking about in terms of the rotation, in terms of everything else that's to come, in terms of what challenges Beeline has, you know, I think this is like a kind of a what kind of things can the Cavs do to kind of survive this stretch, look good against some of these teams. You know, they will get easier games as the season goes on. You get through the Hornets game, you get Atlanta at home. Like, Atlanta doesn't have John Collins, or not as good without him. You get Boston again, but then, you know, you get into Charlotte again. You know, you get, we get both the Lakers and the Clippers on the road later in early in 2019, and you get the Grizzlies again. You get the Bulls, who've been up and down. You get the Knicks again. You get the Wizards. You get smatterings of winnable games, and you get the Warriors in early February. You get through these next couple weeks, they're still going to be tough games. Like, they play the Thunder, who were solid. You get Toronto in Toronto on New Year's Eve. You're getting stuff like this where there's good, there's toughness, there's weird stuff, there's stuff that is really going to make the Cavs uncomfortable, but there's stuff that is also for them, I think, workable, things for them that are doable for them to kind of get through. But they have to get through, I think, particularly these next couple weeks, some really tough games, some really tough stylistic matchups, and some good tests for these guys. You know, you look at the Celtics game, how are they going to defend Kemba? How are the young guys going to handle defending Kemba Walker? I'm going to double check to see that if he's back or not, but Kemba is kind of one of those tough guys to deal with, and kind of one of those guys for the Cavs to really kind of have their young guards defend. If you look at the Bucks game, how do they defend Giannis? You look at the Rockets game, how the heck are the Cavs going to defend Harden, and what is their strategy for that? You know, does Jetty get put out on an island? Does Colin Sexton do it? Like, there's some troubling things in that regard that are going to be pretty challenging. So let's see what the Cavs do. Let's see how they handle these next couple weeks. These are not easy weeks. This is a rough team. I would recommend getting some Anthony Edwards time in. Anthony Edwards is my current favorite potential high draft pick for the Cavs. Plays at Georgia. I think he could be really interesting. And if you look at the lottery, you're going to have chance. There's going to be some interesting stuff. You know, you could watch, if you're a James Wiseman guy, do that. You know, there's certainly some wings, guys, you know, like Jaden McDaniels, guys like, Tyrese Maxey. He's a little smaller, but you got Josh Green, and you got Denny FGV, from who I'm mispronouncing, from Maccabi Tel Aviv. You got guys that are at least interesting, and, you know, maybe watch those guys if the Cavs kind of struggle a little bit. But we'll see where this goes. We'll see how these next weeks handle themselves, and I'll be curious to see just what the Cavs are sort of going to be looking like. We'll do a kind of, I think once we get through this stretch, we've kind of observed how it goes. We'll see. I'll do a little check-in and kind of reflect on what Beeline has sort of done over the next couple weeks. All right, that's going to be it. Glad to be back again. Sorry for the hiatus, but hope everyone had a good holiday. Back tomorrow with another show, probably diving into Kevin Love in particular. Could be me with a guest. We'll kind of see, but definitely we'll have a show for you on December 5th. This has been Locked on Cavs for Wednesday, December 4th. I'm Chris Manning. Talk to you again tomorrow.